This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, this is another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I am Dan Johnson. Today's guest is Mr. Nate. I don't even remember. What do you
whatever
go
you want
by?
To go? My legal name's okay. Nathan. Most
big
people
dog.
Call me Nate.
Nate,
yeah, big
okay.
Dog.
Yeah, big dog.
Yeah,
Nate Crick. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. Yeah, great to catch up with you. It's been a minute, so
I know. Absolutely. I love these conversations because I think like we're kind of the same as far as how we approach the season. And I don't do the food plot stuff that you guys do. But outside of that, I think we approach the season kind of the same. So I like talking with you and I always like having you on. So I figured I'd give you a shout out and get you back on. But how was your fourth, man?
Good fourth. You know, we've got. The fourth changes when you have kids. Like it used to be 100%. Like an all night just rain holy hell upon the earth, but now it's not because I've got kids that need to sleep. We're kind of now I've got a 5-year old that she's like she was up till 10-ish. I mean, she was up till 10, 10:30 with me. But the 3-year old and year and a half old, the 3-year old tries to hang, but he usually starts to tank around 9. Yeah. And then the other one, he's pretty spent by 8. So it's like now kind of, you know, you get him down and then sometimes the wife will stay with him and I'll go pyro with the daughter and stuff and go have some fun. But no, it's still great. I mean, we got a lot of, we're lucky in town. We've got just like a bunch of our family. So we had a lot of family time and ate some good food, had some good drinks and shot some fireworks off. So,
Yep, absolutely. I'll tell you this. My kids now are old enough to, it was supervised, but still like I got some M80s and then, you know, I'll light it, you throw it. And so my youngest 8-year-old, right? So like he'll hold it and I'm like, okay, throw it. And then he throws it or, maybe shoot some Roman candles off. I bought some of those parachute ones. So you do them during the day and they launch a parachute up in the air and then it slowly comes back down. And then the neighborhood kids all run after them. And so I'm teaching them fireworks safety, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like Tom's oldest is 6 and he was like, loving it this year. Like this was like the first year where he was like, I'm lighting off all the fireworks. Yeah. But we have a ton of little cousins and stuff and a couple of them got burned by punks being thrown around. And like, hey, it's part of the fourth. You're gonna be a little bruised up, a little burned up maybe, as long as you keep all the fingers intact. He was lighting everything off. He was gung ho. So
I'll tell you this, man, like this weekend I thought was going to be more relaxing than what it was. Friday night we went to the Savannah Bananas game. That was a shit show. Like it was, dude, I get it. It was supposed to be fun. We had a 2.5-hour rain delay that we got caught in. We couldn't leave because like my boy or my keys were in my brother's car. My brother was in the stadium. They didn't let us in the stadium because there was lightning. And so it turned into like an absolute shit show. And then we finally got in and then we got cold and we were, my wife was shaking because she was wet and cold and it kind of ruined the whole experience for us. And then on the fourth, we did a whole bunch of different things and then we went to a neighborhood fireworks party, which was fun, but I just felt like we were just rushing to relax, if that makes sense. And so that was my 4th of July kind of hurry up and relax type of vibe we had going on there. So All right. Today I want to talk about deer hunting, obviously. But before we get into all of that stuff, I want to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. Like I mentioned, we picked up two new partners that I'm excited about, products that I have, used for a very long time. And I'm happy that now that, we're working together. So right off the bat, Wasp Archery, if you are looking for a fixed blade or a mechanical broadhead, most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. My favorite part about a Wasp broadhead is they destroy whatever they hit. And that's the goal of the broadhead. So if you want to find out more information about Wasp Archery, go visit wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Go check it out. One of the new partners is Ozonix. Okay. Nate, I'll just ask you this. Have you ever used an Ozonix or any ozone type stuff in the tree?
Never in the tree.
Okay. Nope. All right. So you tell me, they're a partner, right? And they have this little bit of like a stigma with them when people are just like, just hunt the wind. You don't need that shit. Just hunt the wind, right? What's your take on like a scent elimination, scent distortion thing like ozone? Tell me the truth. You don't have to sugarcoat it for the audience.
I wouldn't use it. But does it work? I think there's some legitimacy. Yeah. I think it does something. I'm not a deer, so I don't know, but there's enough people using them that think that it's doing something, you know? So I've used like ozone products in the past and it always gave me bad headaches. I don't know if you've ever heard that from people before. It always gave me terrible headaches. Like, Scent Crusher, like we used to use those Scent Crusher bags and when I'd like start that thing up or like open that bag up, that smell would just trigger something. And I don't like get migraines or nothing like that, but I'd always get headaches off of ozone. So that's the main reason I just have more deer smell me. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done that. I've never had the headaches or anything like that. I could smell it, but then again, I don't run them in really tight spaces. Like some people will use some kind of ozone machine in their truck while they're driving down the road. I don't know what outcome of that is. Probably not good. Probably shouldn't do that. But I know that that people, you know, have run ozone machines in their vehicle, or they do have the ones that plug in that are so low dosage that they're not they can't even hurt you. Anyway, what I'm getting at here is, dude, it was probably about 13, 14 years ago, I started using it on Ozonix when they came out, and I had some encounters with some deer that got downwind to me that it just is hard for me to walk away from a product like this. Like I don't know. It's a confidence thing for me. Just the same with my bow, the same with my arrows that I use, the broadheads that I use, all that years of confidence using those products. And so it's something that has a, in the tree application and also a out of the tree application when I do my, dry wash cycle on the, using the ozone in my closet the big tote that I hang up and put all my gear in. So, go check out ozonixhunting.com and check out the complete lineup of all the ozone products, man. I'm telling you, like for me, it means something. I use it and I love it. Okay. Next on the list is Vapor Trail. And I could sit here and just kind of like, why is Vapor Trail so awesome? You got to put it on your bow. Like, I don't know. I was using a Ripcord for several years. They got sold to a company. The quality changed when they were sold, and they weren't the mom and pop shop anymore. They became part of a bigger company, and they lost some of their, I don't know, their quality. And so that's when I had a buddy reach out to me and was like, "Hey, dude, try Vapor Trail." And so I started using one of the limb driven rests from Vapor Trail. So if you're looking for a high quality limb driven, I don't even know if they have cable driven anymore, but a drop away rest, man, you got to go check out Vapor Trail, a badass company. Next on the list is a company that we both work with, Vortex Optics. The people, right? It's almost like the products are secondary. The products are badass, right? But we work with some just amazing people at Vortex.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Quality individuals for sure. I mean, Tom and I have done countless hunts with a lot of those guys, and they're just, I tried to get out to Wisconsin as much as possible to go see those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. VortexOptics.com. Go check out their full lineup of optics and optic accessories. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. Hey, I'm not going to very, very simple to use. Put batteries in the camera, download the app, scan the QR code, and you have a fully functioning, high quality trail camera in a matter of minutes. They have an app now where, the Reveal app itself that's connected to the trail cameras. There's a lot of updates that have been made there from mapping and things like that. So go check out the Reveal app as well, and make sure that you've updated the app for the new updates that have come through. Last but not least, Code Blue Scents. If you're looking for real or synthetic deer urines, they have the scent elimination sprays, and they have the scent elimination body washes. They have the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit, which is my absolute favorite, and I can't wait to, in the next couple weeks, go and get those set up and ready for the season. So Code Blue Scents at CodeBlueScents.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. All right. And that's how I make my money, Nate.
Yep.
I sell a little advertising. Okay.
You got it.
I want to start at trail cameras. Okay. It's summer. Sure. How many trail cameras you got out right now running?
Probably like 15.
15 over 10 to 15. That in Kansas and Nebraska?
Yeah. Both those states. Yep. Some private ground, some permission private. I don't think we have any on public right now. We've got just a portion of them out. I mean, when we get going in the fall, we'll probably be running like 40.
Gotcha. Okay. Across, right. maybe more. Across multiple states on multiple public, private, walk-in, all that stuff, right?
Yep, all that stuff. Yep. And we actually just got a new permission piece last night.
Nice.
This is a benefit of taking kids hunting. This last spring, texted a landowner and trying to get on for turkeys in Nebraska. And she's let us on a handful of times, but it's not like a for sure every year. I have a few in that area that are like for sure, just send them a text. But this lady's like usually, she's like 50-50. But if you get on her, it's like great turkey on ground. And so we went out for youth season. Tom's boy Ridge smacked a big gobbler at like 10 yards, 28 gauge. And I'm a big follow-up post permission season, like send a handwritten letter. And I was like, Tom, like go to Walgreens, get a nice picture printed off of Ridge and us and the bird and everything. Like have Ridge, 6-year-old, like write something in there. And she texted me last night. She's like, what else does the little fellow like to hunt? And I was like, he likes to hunt other stuff. He hasn't shot a deer yet, but like he's going to be deer hunting this fall. And, so she sends me a pin, and it's like a bomb permission piece, like 40 minutes from home, which would be like prayer closest hunting spot. It's like a quarter section, like really good cover, creek going through it, a bunch of crops in the area. And she's like, we've got too many deer, you and him and whoever, like you, your brother and Rich, you want to go out there and smack as many deer as possible, go for it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great. And so, but that's my next, I've got three reveals that I'm going to charge lithiums and get them out there. Cause I want to see what's hanging out there. Well, right now it's just kind of just on our private stuff where we know our cameras aren't going to get messed with. We just have our go-to spots. You know, we've got some on our Culver, and then just like the spots we've had cameras on for 5 years, you know?
Okay. What is the furthest away from your house that you've ever ran a trail camera?
Let's see. Like a cellular or non-cellular, or just any camera?
Any camera.
We've run them in Colorado. I mean, I don't know, that's 14 hours. We've ran ran some in the Dakotas and Wisconsin.
And the reason I'm asking this is like when, cause I would love to run trail cameras in South Dakota when I go out there, right? Looking for mule deer, you know, try to find a little, some type of topographic pinch that they kind of flow through naturally. Or when I go to, you know, when I've hunted Western Nebraska, try to find maybe a watering hole or, like some kind of crossing or something for the whitetails that are out there. Any of that information that you've gained that far away from home, knowing, hey, dude, like I get a picture in September, or when you're going that far, are you leaving those trail cameras out like all year and then only checking them once a year? Or are they cell cams that are sending you information all year long? How's that work?
The spots that we, like the far spots that we put cameras out, like South Dakota, non-residents can't hunt it, the public, until October. And so we were actually up there for an antelope hunt like a month before. And so we're like, okay, let's deploy some cameras. And then we just let them sit there for like a month before the hunt. And that was huge and tough for us, honestly. We got into some really good deer actually that year.
Mule deer or whitetails?
Whitetails. Yep.
Whitetails. Okay.
Whitetails, you can hunt them both, but like we were primarily trying to get some whitetail intel, and that was very beneficial. And then the other spot in Colorado, we always go out there for a summer trip.
Okay.
And so we were like, okay, we usually, if we have the energy and effort, we'll go up on top, spend a day climbing and hit some wallows that are going to be active. Cause man, when you get there like mid to late September and you can check that card that's been rolling for a few months, it's also very beneficial, especially on wallows. You can see if there's any consistency or whatnot. We've never had the elk one pay off like crazy. Just cause usually they're just too rutted up when we actually hunt them. But, we try to, like the Wisconsin one was on, we have some family out there that we ran some on out there. Just if we can get to it somewhat reasonable, because that's the big thing, is getting back out to it. Like even this fall, we're doing a North Dakota hunt.
Yep.
And we're going to go do a pre-scout and lay some cameras out and let them soak for a month, month and a half. And then kind of let them do some work for us. That's the kind of thing that I'll do the further cameras. But when we're spending the money and we're going on a long hunt like that, like we'd love to get a pre-scout in. And so that's what we're going to do, an August scout, and then give it, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks and hunt it sometime in September. That's the ideal situation, is just like, no, we're going to get back there. We're not just going to like leave them and like, well, we'll get back here maybe next year. So it's not a 4 year soak.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just kind of curious, cause I've always thought about, you know, like I was on a run there this year. I'm not going because of my knee, but I was on a run there for a while where I was like, dude, should I just bring some trail cameras in to South Dakota and leave them up either for whitetails or for mule deer and just kind of see what happens? But I always have this gut feeling like cattle are going to bump into them. There is limited spots to hang them. Unless you're hunting like a river bottom or something like that, grass could grow up, a cow could brush up against it, other hunters could, you know, just take it. Do you have any concerns like that when you're running trail cameras that far from home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mainly the hunter issue. But like, we're lucky, or I don't know if we hunt just hard to get to spots, but we really haven't had a lot taken. In Kansas, on public, you can't obviously have any cameras running. So we never run them like really heavy on Nebraska public, where I know cameras get messed with all the time. Just because, honestly, I think it's a waste of time on public. That's just going to be disturbed a lot. It's like, you're not going to really, maybe there's spots where you can catch some consistency, you know?
Yeah.
But that's when trail cameras are very beneficial, you know? Getting some repeat users on the trail camera where it's like, okay, you can kind of figure out that deer a little bit. But on a public where I'm like, it's going to get hammered at some point, and those, you, I'd rather just go in there blind and hunt, hunt sign and do that kind of thing in the fall than trust like trail cameras. So a lot of the stuff we're doing on is just private. Now we've had permission cameras get messed up and landowners taking cards, and back in the day when it was pre-cellular, and it is what it is, you know. It's on their place and they're just like interested, let's check that card, and then they don't put it in. It's like, oh yeah, shit out of luck.
What's the, you mentioned that you were running South Dakota trail cameras for whitetails, right? Mm-hmm. And you mentioned how it really played a key role in your guys' success. Explain that to me and how that worked. All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Yeah, it was like, I felt like, you know, like the first like 3 to 4 days of a hunt, like if you have 10 days, those first few days, like you're still just being like, is this a good area? You know, or is this like, are there good deer here? What kind of food sources are they up? I felt like the trail cameras answered the first 2 to 3 days of questions. Okay. And you could just get in there aggressively.
Go right into it. Yeah.
Yes, because you knew that they're one, this spot, we knew they're a good deer. So like that wasn't a question of like, oh, is it worth hanging around? We knew they're a good deer, daylight and nocturnal, like they were huntable. And then you also, like we had someone on food source. So then you're like, okay, you figured out what food source was there. And that was also part of just being there boots on the ground the month before, is like you could figure out what was in, you know, what cover looked good, what food looked good. So as part of just seeing it with dry eyes too. But yeah, we were able to get on a few bucks. In South Dakota, we had crazy big deer we were hunting, and like full on double main beam, like with tines, both of them, both main beams had tines. It was beneficial on that front. I don't know if we shot one that year, but we were hunting, like we were on them, saw them in the field several times. Like, and it was something that like we want to do again. We're trying to figure out if we're going to be able to do that again this year. Make a little detour and go get some out, because it saves some time on the front end behind the glass. So yeah
absolutely. And so basically, long story short, it because anytime you are in a non-resident hunt or an out-of-state hunt, you're always up against the clock, and you're always kind of like, oh my god, like where are they at, where do I need to do? And so you're saying that ends up flattening that curve
big time. Time like this North Dakota trip we're gonna do, I mean, we're hoping to get a little private permission, do some door knocking and stuff like that. But if we could get out a pile of cameras on there and be able to just kind of save a few of those days where it's like, hey, if you only have a week and you're 10 hours away, it's like, you don't want to have, I mean, you still have, like, even with cameras, you still have to have a little bit of a pre-scout, you know. You can't just dive right in there. You need to get some eyeballs on stuff before, but it does absolutely save you some of that scouting effort. And especially when it's far away, man, you want to make that hunt worth it. You're in it for time, money, tags, all that stuff. It's like, I usually find that's beneficial big time. So
absolutely. Okay. Right now, you said you had about 15 trail cameras out. Talk to me a little bit about the locations that you have these trail cameras and why they're there.
So some of our cameras are just like observation. I'm not trying to be super technical. It's just like, hey, this camera is on here to see how this clover comes up or see how the beans are looking, if they're really weedy, if we're not going to be there for a week or something. And then you end up catching deer. Some of them are legit just like, hey, in Kansas, we've got some mineral sites. It's like, you're going to get the random stroll through buck or just kind of keep some sort of information going on that. Our best camera right now, which is absolute fire, shooter or potential shooter on it, like pretty much every day, is in Nebraska. And it's on the edge of a cornfield, which is kind of surprising, but it's kind of like a pinch between some thicker timber and kind of like this just natural, there's kind of like a bigger creek that kind of cuts through it. So it's like, this is where they need to move. And, I haven't looked yet in person to see like what kind of food source are coming off, but they're always coming through this camera like a late morning. So they're either, I don't think they're coming off of food. I think they're coming off of their first bed and going to their second bed. But it's always like around 9 a.m. and it's clockwork. And I always see them, they're going into the cornfield. Now, I haven't gotten eyes on them to see like if they're going in there to bed, which I know they do, or if they're going up on this back hillside and just like, I see them going in the corn and then they hang out and then just move up and around. I haven't gotten boots on the ground, and I only have one camera in this spot. But it is like legit clockwork. It was actually just a turkey. It was just a turkey camera that we just didn't take down. And we can deer hunt the spot too. And, we caught a bunch of turkeys on it, and then boom, like the bucks started using it like crazy. Just, I literally think it's just cause it's the easy accessible travel in between food or in between beds. Like that's the only thing I can find. If it was like my first time on this place and I was setting cameras out, I don't think it'd be like my go-to spot to put it up.
Is this by chance? Obviously there's like some transition there, like a cornfield, which kind of creates an edge. And usually there's kind of like a buffer grassy area right in between there. And then does that butt up to like a timber stand?
Yep.
Okay.
That's exactly it. Yep.
And then by chance, does that area also lower terrain than the rest of the field?
So it's kind of interesting. This is like from a kind of a bluffy area. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the transition into the lower field. It's like right at that crease a little bit. So it's not in the low bottom. It's kind of in that crease where it comes off the big timber into a grass patch into the crop. I mean, it's in that grass patch that they're moving through. But it's interesting. Like there's not a bean field right next to it. Like it's just more big cover. Where they're coming in, where they're coming from. So it's interesting. That's why I think it's them moving after their initial bed, because it's too late in the morning for them to be coming off of that food source. I think it's already been bright for 3 hours by the time they're kind of moving through there. So I assume they're bedding somewhere on that cover on the neighbors and then transitioning through there. But it's been interesting. I'm very intrigued to see if they hang out like that through August. Because I'm going to be on their ass if they're doing that in August. Yeah. So.
When does your season open in Nebraska?
September 1.
Okay, September 1. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude.
So you could possibly go.
Have you ever had, out of curiosity, a velvet buck still September 1 that you were going after?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have. Yep. And we had a really big one 2 years ago, and he was just starting to shed on that opener. We never got on him, but more frequent than I think what people think. We could shoot Delaware if we want to, but I'd rather, honestly, I'd rather have him hard horn, but bucks are big bucks. I'd shoot him either way.
Yeah, exactly. I always thought like it would be cool for Iowa residents to, I don't know, once every 5 years, once every 7 years, have Iowa have a special tag. And this would be for archery or muzzleloader. You get your tag, you can use it the last week in August or the third week in August or whatever it is, and you get it. That is your tag. So if you shoot it in August, you're done hunting the rest of the year, right? So it's not like the everything, like the tag quota changes at all. It just means that you can, that tag for your resident tag is used up.
But yes.
I always thought that would be really sweet to go and be able to shoot one velvet buck. But if I had to choose between velvet and hardhorn, and I'm probably choosing hardhorn. For some reason, I don't know why.
Oh, I'm every single time. Yep. So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you, you have all like free permission stuff right now? Or are you like, do you have leases lined up in Iowa?
No, dude. All of my stuff is still permission. Knock on wood. Yep.
Okay. Got it. Yep. So, okay. So I'm in an interesting dilemma that I thought I'd bring up to you. So I got, I considered it more of a permission in Kansas. It's where me and Eric shot our bucks last fall.
Yep.
And I remember you FaceTimed us that day, by the way, when you were in the tree, which was awesome. I highly recommend if you're in the tree or you saw somebody shoot a buck, you just need to FaceTime them up. Cause dude, that's the rut magic. And Dan was like, as you do, like you're holding like the phone, like an inch from your face. You're like, I'm in the tree. Congrats. And we were just dying, but so I'm in a dilemma. So that permission spot, it was insane. It was insane in November.
Yeah.
Through the summer, we ran cameras on it. And this was just like a local guy, through real estate I knew. And he was like, absolutely hunt it. We paid him something. So I always kind of think like there's leases that like, there's leases that you pay for. And then there's like, I consider this more of a permission that I talk to the guy and be like, hey, like I offer to pay. Cause I'm like, I know what the resource is like. And it's not like I don't pay him what you're going to have to pay for like a base camp, you know, lease or something like that. But like I pay him and be like, hey, thank you. And I feel like it makes more of like a legit, not like a contractual thing, but it's like, hey, I'm paying to hunt here. It's like, it's a firm permission, you know? And so there were, in November, it was pretty nuts. And into December, there was a deer, like for sure upper 80s. And then there was a deer, I shot a 160. I've measured them like three times between 165 and 167. Eric shot probably right in the 160 line. And those were like the small deer on there.
Yeah.
Like, There is a for sure close to 200, and then there was a very high mid 80s.
Dang, dude.
Using that same piece. And they weren't like on it though. Like they're living somewhere within a mile ish, I bet. They weren't like on it. And you just get occasional middle of the night, like, but it was like you were in the game enough to be like, there's potential. So this guy, he reached out and was like, at the end of the season, we had a super good fall. Like I respect the hell out of permission pieces. Like I go over the top to be like, where do you want me to park? All that stuff, you know, cause I want it to last. And at the end, like after our bucks, like we shot some of that stuff mid November, I was talking to him and he's like, yeah, let's do like a long-term thing. And I was like, dude, I will pay you like a 3 to 5 year like permission. Like we can formulate it as a lease, you know? And like, we're not residents, so there are years I will be paying you that we will not hunt and we'll still pay you. Like, I just wanted to lock it in long term. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great.
Yep.
So he's had these guys come up and the rifle hunt for a long time, and they're like family friends. And rifle season in Kansas is like the first week of December, first 2 weeks of December. Usually it's like the third to the 12th or 13th. Sometime they're like those 10 days, 2 weeks. And those guys were all pissed off that we were hunting it, you know, and we weren't hunting like where they were. And they usually don't really hunt where we were, but they were just mad that we got in on it, you know, and we were like totally cool with them. The landowner wouldn't give me their information for some interesting reason. Cause I was like, hey, I'll send them trail cam photos so they know what's around. And they usually, they come up and shoot a bunch of 3-year-olds and cause they're from more southeast. And those, they're happy with those deer, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
And so at the end of this last season, I was actually hunting in South Dakota, late December or something. And he texted me like, hey, get all your stuff off at the end of the lease. Like, you're not hunting on here anymore. I was like, okay, I kind of know this guy's like a little bit of a loose cannon. And so I just called him up immediately. Cause I'm like, I'm not doing this text thing that he tries to do. I'm going to call him up immediately and be like, I was like, dude, what's going on? Like, we had a great fall. Like, you were always in a good mood. Like, I felt like it took care of you. We got him some Vortex stuff, paid him something, and like respected the crops overly. And he's like, nope. I hate hunters. There's so much drama with every hunter. And I'm like, dude, like, there's no drama. Like, there was absolutely no drama. Like, well, the rifle guys, they're all pissed off and stuff. And so what I'm getting to is technically we're not supposed to be hunting that place. And I won't hunt it, obviously, unless I get the yes. But I know there's two really good deer in the vicinity. And I have talked to like all the neighbors and I've gotten no's from everybody. And so my question to you is, what would be your play to try to get back in the door and know that even if you just get it for one more year, Tom and I both drew Kansas. Like, we can hunt it. We both drew the non-resident tag, so we can hunt anywhere in the unit. What would be your play to go try to pitch?
All right. So let me get this straight. You guys signed a lease. Like, did you sign a lease? Did you pay the guy already for the 3 or 5 years?
Nothing for this year.
Okay.
It was just this one year, and he was all pissed off at the end of the season. He wasn't really pissed off at me. He was just pissed off at hunters.
No. Let me guess what happened. Here's what happened. I'm going to guess. So you guys got permission on this piece. The other group of hunters found out about it. Their honey hole is not a honey hole anymore to them because they have a group of archery hunters that come in. And whether you know or not, they might have paid some money to have that spot, or they had that all to themselves. And then all of a sudden, now the landowner's getting calls from this guy going, hey, like, I thought we were the only guys on there. And then that group of hunters started putting so much pressure on this guy where he all of a sudden said, fuck it, you know, and he's just sick of it.
That's exactly
like sick of the fighting. And now probably nobody gets to hunt it, or he's kicking you guys out because it's easier to tell you no than to deal with the people that are bitching about it. All right.
That's exactly it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So now that we know that's what happened. All right. Yes. Number one is this guy, is this landowner a friend or just an acquaintance? Like,
he's an acquaintance. Yes.
Okay. Yep. So he's not necessarily like me and you, right? It's just a different type of connection. Yeah.
I've tried to befriend him. Mm-hmm. It's difficult though. I know he's not listening to this. He's just, it's a little bit of a difficult personality. Like, I don't think he has a ton of, I don't know if a bunch of the neighbors love him.
Okay.
Just put it that way.
And he doesn't hunt.
Mm-mm. I mean,
no. Okay.
A morning he'll sit in his truck maybe.
So this is what you do. How much time has gone by since he's told you no hunting on his farm?
So that was December. But I've texted him, like, I texted him just randomly a few times, like this spring, checking in because we got rocked by some twisters. So I did like the, hey, you guys safe? Like, you guys make it through? Just like a check-in text, you know?
Yep.
With no strings attached. Let's put it, no strings attached. Just, hey, you guys good? Because we had some tornadoes come through, like, and they were good. So that's the only communication I've had since then.
Okay.
And
all right. So, let me see here. Do you still have any trail cameras or tree stands on the property?
No.
Okay. We were like, well, that there goes that.
We were like, there's a good chance that we're never going to see this place again. So we just, well, we were just saddle hunting anyways, but we pulled all of our cameras off. So yeah.
Okay. Well, at this point, you've been told no. You know that there's high quality deer there, and that's why you want to go back, right, to that area, because you know the caliber of deer. He's probably not stupid. So he knows what's running around on his farm too, especially if you're showing him all this stuff and the other hunters are probably showing him or talking to him about it as well. And so here's what I would do. I call him up one more time. And I just like, I would say somewhere around August, and I go, hey, listen, me and my brother, we both drew Kansas this year. I'm just curious, after some time has gone by, if you've had an opportunity to probably think about this a little bit more. I would love to talk this scenario out with you and what that looks like. And maybe he goes straight to a full lease. Right. You go, hey, I'm just curious if we could hunt this for 1 week in November or something like that. Maybe he goes, pay me. Right. And then you got to decide whether it's going to be a permission piece or if it's a lease piece. And if he has the energy to deal with the other hunters who are, I'm guessing, are bitching about it, you know, in the first place. Right. Yes. Or did he kick those guys off too? You know, like that kind of
thing.
They
won't be kicked off. They'll hunt there forever. Like
if those are buddies.
They're friends. So they were really good buddies with his dad.
Okay.
So there's a family connection there that it's like, they're going to be hunting that for the long haul, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. That's going to be tough to get back on there. I would just one more phone call, ask him, shoot him straight, no bullshit type of scenario. And then, if you think that area is really, really good, you go on a door knocking mission around every single property that touches that property.
Yeah.
Right. Especially if he's not a friend. Like for me, if let's say, for example, you hunted that farm and I got kicked off of it for some reason, or you hunted a neighboring farm, I'm not door knocking on that farm or any farms that touch that farm. Like there's just kind of like a code there, but if you don't know anybody or you have no connection to that, then I say knock away, my friend. Go try to gain permission. Maybe there's some walk in. Maybe there's something like a creek system that runs through it that could pull one of those bucks on a long Kansas cruise.
Yeah,
because they move, you know, just as well as I do. Yep. They move a long ways in the rut. Try to find that piece. In that area. So that tells me there's genetics there. There's older age class there. And so put in a little time door knocking and see what happens. That's about as much as you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good play. I was like, my brain, the way I went, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this guy a lot of time.
Yeah.
He needs to not be thinking about deer hunting at all.
Yeah.
So that's why I think like the late summer, like you said, is good. I think ideally I'd like to be with him in person, but the phone call is definitely the backup. But I think like you said, what I want to pitch him is like just a small amount of time, you know, whereas we were like full season. I'm like, we'll be off of there. Let's be off of there a week before rough season, you know, because rough season in December, like if we can hunt the first 3 weeks of November, done, you know. I'd love to hunt some after post rifle season, which I don't think he'd give a shit about, you know, but my pitch might be like, hey, let's do October 15th to November
15th.
Yeah. Sometime like that. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Something like that. And then December 15th to the end of the year, you know, where it's like, okay, it's a lot smaller. And then I do think money talks with this individual, which I think it talks with most people. And I'm like, I'm not loaded. Tom and I aren't loaded. But it's like, if a couple grand, trips his trigger, I'll be writing that check really fast. For a season, I'm like, that's still, I mean, very affordable from what a lot of people are paying for leases. So it's like, if $2,000, if he'll do something like that, like I'm not going to pay $5,000 for a season, but like if he'll pay a couple grand, I'd write that check because I know what's going to be around there. The neighbor situation is interesting. Like, I've called a bunch of those neighbors, but I do think that's probably an in-person thing, which tracking them down is difficult because the way it works is like, there's not very many people living on those parcels anymore. You got to find their tax address, and some of them are local, some of them aren't. So it might be a handwritten letter type of thing, but kind of an interesting situation. But
yeah. Have you ever wrote a note to someone in the mail as like almost a, I don't know, have your phone number. I'm just going to send you a letter in the mail with my information on it and just be like, hey, I'm looking for hunting properties in your area just to gain some permission for 1 week out of the entire year. I thought about doing that to some pieces in South Dakota and seeing what they would say, especially if they're along like a river or something like that. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever gotten any good results on something like that?
Yeah. I do a ton of letters. I do a lot for turkey. I probably did 80 this last spring, and I got 3 yeses. Mm-hmm. For deer, it's gotten a little crazy where I can't find the quick turn for permission for deer. Like, I feel like you need to really like know people for a long time. Like, it's the long-term relationship that gets you the deer hunting stuff. So I haven't had as much luck with that. I feel like the deer is more of like a, try to get any permission and then create the relationship, because they just need to know you, I think, for the deer side of things. It's just a different thing. Whereas turkey, you can just get a random yes from the landowner and they're like, absolutely have at it. But no, I've done a lot. And actually, for our North Dakota trip, I just sent out 40 and I did the same thing. I was like, hey, we will be there for this singular week. I'm not paying for anything up there, but I'm like, if you'll let us on, we'll respect the hell out of the place. I'll meet with you beforehand. You can show us everything you want and meet us, vet us. And I haven't gotten any calls yet. I just sent them out last week. So maybe later this week, I'll be getting some North Dakota rings. We'll see.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So if you get a yes on some of those properties, are you making a special trip up there with a trail camera to meet and hang and maybe put in some tree stands and stuff?
Big time. Yeah, bunch of cameras. Yeah. We'll be going out. I'll be taking a truck full of reveals up there and dispersing like crazy. So
yeah,
hopefully get some yeses. We'll see. I think honestly, with as much public as like it's kind of up in that area, I'm like, I'll probably put some out of public anyway. I don't know. Yeah. Just because it's such a big effort trip, I'm like, I'll probably still get some out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Might as well. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. I kind of want to get back into this conversation about trail cameras. The deer on your farms in Kansas and Nebraska, the stuff that's kind of closer to home that you pay more attention to, are these deer going through that late summer shift? I mean, are the deer on your property now going to be the deer on your property that are there in October and November?
This is a weird year for us.
Yeah.
Typically there's homebodies that we're like, absolutely. They're the deer we keep track of year to year. Last year that deer was a 205 inch deer. And this year we just don't have, we have a bunch of like 3-year-old, potentially 4-year-old deer that we recognize. But just last night we got a picture of maybe the most mature deer we've had yet. And
oh, really?
Tom actually tracked him down to last fall, and it was a deer we had just a few days. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. Like, that's the first like weird movement I've seen from a deer, like kind of maybe sussing something out, you know? Yeah. I know it's like we're still months away from season and them kind of maybe feeling some change, but like it was a deer that I know we only had during the rut in one time late season, and he showed up last night randomly. And I'm like, that's interesting. Like, that's him just like checking out new territory, or like his, like it's slightly outside of his range a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's this year, we don't have a lot of those homebodies that like are for sure going to be around, but low key, I think that sometimes makes better rut on the stuff we hunt. Like the years that we've had like giant homebodies, we've hunted that deer really hard. And like, yeah, you're chasing a good one quite a bit, but those year, like, we don't get the random rut bucks. we've seen that correlate like quite heavily. So
basically what you're saying, and this is what it sounds like you're saying anyway, is that that homebody buck is the mature buck, dominant buck in the area.
Yep.
And he's holding your farm, and anything that comes in gets kicked out type of, or they leave, because anything else is kind of just a skirting through type of deal.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. It's interesting. Like the years that we have a giant homebody that we're hunting, like we've known him for a lot of time. He's on us through the summer into the fall. Yeah. Those years, like the November, for us in Kansas, like the mid November to late November is a lot slower, and we don't have like those big rut bucks. And through the 23 and 24 were both years, like we didn't have like a big, big homebody. And they were years that like the mid to late rut cruiser, they were off the chains. This last year was not the case, because we had for sure 2 5-year-olds and 1 6-year-old that were on us frequently, just from it, with their, they're just their core area. And I don't know if we had a single like random stranger buck stroll through last fall, which is like maybe the first time ever. So it could just be coincidence. I don't know, but it seemed like it wasn't.
I got one farm that holds a ton of deer in the summer, and then it all kind of shifts when the crops come out and the deer go hard horn and the vegetation. It's a bigger open timber anyway, and so it's like unless the acorns are there, then they're not type of deal. But then the other farm that I hunt, which is further away from the house, that holds summer deer, and they tend to stick around. They stay on the farm, or at least move through the farm more, if that makes like more, and stay tighter to that area. Not sure why. It could be because of cover too. It's in like a bigger cattle pasture / CRP egg. And then there's just pockets of timber that connect by like little trees and bushes and that are along waterways too. So it could be more of like a, this is where I was born, this is where I'm going to stay, and I'll cruise out looking for does, following these little waterways. But when it's time to live, then I'm here.
You definitely have to have the full year
of
habitat, because the first couple of years that we had our Kansas place, we did not get a mature buck until September that first year. Which was insane. Like in the summer, it was, and we bought the property in the winter. And it was like, we did not have like something like big until that shift happened. And then the fall was crazy nuts. And we're like, oh, they're just, maybe this is more of a fall place. But since we've had a lot of food, we've got 3 to 4 acres of corn beans every year that we leave standing. Now we've got a bunch of different clover plots. We have the deer staying on us throughout the whole year. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Do you keep your trail cameras in the same spot all year long, or are you shifting them around throughout the year to different locations? Like they're in their summer location now, and now we got to switch them to our hunting season location. What's that look like?
We definitely do some of that, but we also, some of the cameras are just, it's that spot and they're staying there the whole time. And they'll be good all year. Some of them will just be, it just correct pinch and just travel, you know, at that point. But there's always I feel like for Tom and I, there's always like a rainy, either late September, early October day where we just go crazy and we just boom, all the fresh sign, getting them on the scrapes. And that's when we get like the full arsenal of cameras out. But that's a place, I mean, that's the home property where we just like know it so well. So like some of those cameras, like we can get out earlier and earlier because we just know that they're going to be good. But for a lot of the newer stuff from the Nebraska stuff, we'll definitely wait for that shift to kind of happen. So
yeah, for sure.
Go crazy.
For sure. When, talk to me specifically about where you're hanging your trail cameras. What are your favorite places to hang trail cameras, and go into as much detail as you can that gets you the most deer activity throughout the year?
Let me think about my best camera. So potentially the best camera we have on the 80 is underneath big oaks. that are usually producing acorns every year. Some years are good, some years are slim, but it's got acorns. And it's a travel area where the neighboring piece, on the other side of the fence, it's ag. Mm-hmm. And then we're like the connecting cover. And so for them to get through, if they want to be on the neighbors, for them to kind of, they either have to cross that open field after it's picked, or they come into our cover and move through it that way. And that is our best one. And it's traffic. Obviously, like, you can get your hottest cameras to be on the fresh sign in October, but like our year round cameras, it's all traffic. I find the best ones to be like along creek banks where it's like they have to move here, you know? And then those are really good rut cameras too. They're going to have to use that stuff throughout the entire year. But yeah, our best one, like it's got the food source to be able to hang around it. It's just got the connecting cover, which is always strong. Some of ours, I feel like a lot of them were using the, we use like creek or river terrain, you know, to just force them to the spot. And those are the ones that it seems to hang out all year. Like some of our, like our clover and our bean plots, like it's very hit or miss throughout the time of the year. A lot of our scrape cameras, like it's hit or miss. Just when it's good, it's great. And when it's not, it's not. So I feel like more and more it's like using terrain to just like, those are our best year round cameras. Like even the one I was talking about in Nebraska, that one that's like crazy right now. I'm getting summer bucks daily. It's like, I think that's a terrain thing. Like, I think it's, I think no matter what crop is in that bottom field, I think they've used the same. And I'll be interested. We've never really hunted this spot like hard in the fall because our energy usually shifts elsewhere, but this year could be different because there's a few really good deer on this place. So it'll be interesting to see if this is a summer little thing or if, they'll consistently kind of use it like that. So.
Yeah. Have trail cameras over a water source, like not for crossing, but for drinking. Has that ever worked for you in getting good picks?
So we've dabbled in it, but we've never like gone full on. Like we've tried like with smaller sources of water and stuff. But it was actually something I was literally texting Tom maybe last week or 2 weeks ago. I was like, we always have water on our property because we have a pretty good creek system and stuff, but like we've never dug out a legit trench or like, I don't know what those guys are using, some sort of tub tank thing, you know? And I was like, that might be the one thing that we're missing in like a camera approach to be able to like get consistent picks somewhere. Cause I see guys that just, they're crazy about it. I have a buddy, Tom Senna, he hunts over in Illinois and that's what his best cameras are on water sources. And it's fairly clockwork for him. It seems like during parts of the year, it's like better than bait. I mean, obviously they needed to survive. So, but no, it's something that I want to try cause I've seen people really get locked in on it.
Yeah. This is crazy, dude. I've tried to put trail cameras over ponds or creeks, like pools of water, even seeps in the timber where I have a property that has real rocky soil and there's water that leaks out of it almost nonstop throughout the year, even when it's really dry. And so I've tried to put trail cameras on those types of places, even dug out like little holes to where it's just like maybe a handful of water at a time is in there, but it could be used as a little drinking stop. And I have never got a ton of pictures. Honestly, even in the hottest months on around some of the ponds that I have on the farms, there's not a ton of deer trails or deer tracks. And so I'm just like curious, you know, everybody says water source, water source, water source. Well, where are these deer getting their water from? I'm guessing most of it's from the vegetation that they eat.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really witnessed a lot of deer drinking. Like, it's kind of funny to say, but it's like, think about all like the hunting early season throughout the whole year. Like, have I ever like seen a deer just like seek it out? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, it's like, I have buddies that like literally their stands are on water and it's like their deer get in that pattern. It's like a bait station. It's like, and it could be completely based on water accessibility. But I've also feel like I've seen places that are pretty wet, do that. And so, I don't know. For us, we just haven't been motivated enough to do it because it's like we have so much water that we know it's not a necessity. We know that they don't need it.
Exactly.
It's like our place is always, I feel like our place in Kansas is always needing to dry out. Like it's always wet. It's just, it holds, the timber's thick. It just holds moisture. It's humid. We've got creek systems and it's like, I don't know. Right. We don't find the motivation to try it, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel it. It's the same. I think where it would really work would be like someplace extremely dry, like Western Nebraska or something or someplace like that way out there. Yeah. But then again, there, you know, who knows on a, you could be wasting your time with cattle tanks or whatever the water source is or mule deer. I mean, Jesus, they live in areas where there's no water. Right. And they're doing fine somehow. Mm-hmm. So whatever. I don't know.
And then you got to figure out about those really dry spots that you think would be like really work well. It's like, then you got to get water there frequently. Yeah. So then you're like, okay, a lot of landowners, like they have the tanks on wells and stuff. So it's like, okay, that's not a problem. But for like, I don't know, an average deer hunter, maybe that's trying to do something out there. It's like, good luck keeping water in the hot spots, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why it gets tricky too. So.
Exactly. Yeah. As far as any other trail camera tricks, tips, tactics that you use throughout the year, maybe transitioning into your hunting locations, do you run mock scrapes at all?
Not like full on mock scrapes. No.
Yeah.
No. I feel like I get asked that all the time. I'm like, I don't know. We have so many good ones that just pop up every year that we like put the cameras on that, but it's like, we're not generating one. But I know guys, I know you use them a ton, don't you?
Yeah. Like, and not necessarily to shoot over, which I'm trying to get spots where that happens. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, I'll challenge you. I'll give you a challenge this year. Sure. Make one mock scrape this year with, you know, obviously I'm a Code Blue guy. That's what I like to use and that's what's worked for me. But I challenge you, make a mock scrape and put a trail camera over top of it. Especially this time of year, man, I have found it's not better than mineral, but it's pretty damn close, especially if the ground has moisture in it and there's scent in the tree and on the ground and things like that. And the does will start coming to it, and then you'll see some little fawn heads pop up, and then right around the time that they really shine is when the velvet comes off, and that's when like they start making more sign and they're rubbing trees and they're coming up. They want to put their scent everywhere to let everybody know, like, here I am. That's when the true inventory comes, because I don't like Kansas is different. Like, you can bait in Kansas, but in Iowa, you can't hunt anywhere around a mineral station. So all of my mineral stations have to be way far away from where I'm hunting. And so for me to try to get inventory in, that's the best way that I've found to get inventory closer to my hunting locations, to be honest with you.
Yep.
So,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We have feeders and mineral throughout like the off season. We'll run them through like to try to get some more sheds, feed heavy through, I don't know, March, right?
Yep.
And then we let the feeders kind of go, and then we'll do mineral, do some trophy rock stuff throughout, I don't know, put that out in May, June timeframe right now. And then we'll just leave our mineral sites up through the fall and then throw the bait down again kind of in the January time frame, try to hold those deer around on us. But yeah, that would be interesting. Like, so are you like throwing like a, are you doing it on a tree, or are you like throwing like a 4x4 into the ground, or what are you doing for this?
For me, everything I do is on a tree.
Yeah.
As of right now, I'm not, I don't do like put it on a fence post or Yeah, put in a 4x4 because I don't do the food plot thing that where that would work. Most of my stuff is either on a field edge next to a bedding area or within shooting distance of a tree stand, right? Ultimately, my goal when I get all the, like my farm set up with it is I want an established all year scrape with a mock scrape in sight, like that mock scrape there where they're coming to just visit it. And here's the deal. You look at a scrape and guys like us, we'll look at a scrape and we'll go, hey, nothing's been here. It's not used. There's leaves on it. It looks old, but they're not scraping every time they visit a scrape. Sometimes they're just smelling. And that's what kind of opened up the whole mock scrape thing for me and putting a trail camera over it is because they will come through and they'll just do the licking branch almost more than actually scrape. So they're coming in, they're doing the licking branch and then they're gone. And they're not dropping, they're not, you know, opening up the scrape every single time. And that told me that, hey, just because you see a scrape doesn't mean that they're not there.
Yep.
Right. And so they could be visiting it on the daily almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So are you putting anything in the tree or are you just leaving it natural? Like, are you doing any rope or anything like that?
Yeah. So I'll do the rope on some of them, which is crazy because you think this giant blue rope is going to scare them away or like, what's that? It sticks out to them and then they come to investigate it and then they get downwind of it and smell the preorbital scent. And then you see them slowly kind of walking their way in to investigate it for the first time. And then after that, it's normal for them. And then they're using that as their, right? They come in and smell it. They maybe lick it. They may go through the whole thing or not, but dude, you pair that, just give it a try. Give one a try this year and see, and maybe you like it. Maybe you don't, dude.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's interesting. So what's the fall looking like for the current knee situation?
No Western hunts.
Okay.
Okay. So I chopped all those off because I didn't want to be like I feel like I'm going to be able to go do something. Like I could walk a ways, but I wanted a whole year under my belt. You know what I mean? To get comfortable with it. I'm going to be able to climb a ladder, climb a tree stand. I'm going to be able to do all that stuff. But I'm not going to, like, I don't think I'm going to be doing a ton of running and gunning. I set up multiple tree stands during shed season in better spots. So I'm hoping that all I have to do is show up. I'm not going to be afraid. Yeah. Cause I'm feeling, my knee's feeling much better now. And so as far as climbing a tree, twisting around, there might be a little bit of limitations, but I'm not going to go full Dan Johnson mode where I'm getting in trees with like 30 splits and having to climb over and twist around and stuff. And, but the knee feels great. I wanted to have a season where I'm just in Iowa.
Yeah,
and I'll just shoot more does if I want to feel the urge. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way to go. So are you still doing like PT? Or are you like mostly pain free? Or what's the where you at?
Yeah, it's still tight. When I use it, like after I mow the yard, there's not a pain, but it's real tight and stiff. And so that will eventually go away, from what they tell me. So right now I'm just on a once a week physical therapy, actually once every other week physical therapy. Where I'm just coming in, they're taking a look at it. Insurance paid for a certain number of amounts. So I'm just going to, until those run out, I'm going to keep going.
Got it. So are you, have you entered the it's July, I need to shoot my bow or shitload phase or where are you at?
Dude, okay. These are all great questions. My archery setup has been the same for the last 5 or 6 years now. And I said to myself, I'm getting a new bow this year. I'm going to get a new bow this year. And instead I took my old bow and got a new string on it. So I just got a text yesterday that said, hey, you can come pick up your bow, and it's ready to shoot. I'm dropping down to 65 pounds this year, and we'll see what that whole thing looks like. I'm going to need to, I probably change my arrows this year potentially because of that. I'll get a little bit lighter of an arrow. I'm shooting like 525 right now, so I might drop down to like 475 or something like that, and go a little bit lighter now that I'm shooting a lighter. I mean, that's still going to kill just about every animal, but I just want to make sure I get the penetration and speed that I need to get, you know, to kill the animals. But I'm not worried at 20. Like, dude, the longest I've ever killed an animal is like 33 or 35 yards. And that's including the mule deer that I shot this year. So I've never I've tried longer shots, but I put myself in positions for whitetails, especially where everything's close, man. So I don't need like, I don't know. That's just me, but
dude, that's
I haven't
how it
started
should be
shooting
for whitetail. We've got a bunch of like Western hunts this year, as we usually do. So that's where usually around this time frame, the fear starts to creep in. Like I'm still doing some shooting, but it's not like a daily thing. Cause I live in town. So like, I can do 20 yards in the backyard, you know?
Yep.
But like I got to actually go to a range and shoot, which is, it's more work. But now I'm like, I really got antelope on the docket. You know, that's, I mean, if you're shooting them at 60, that's, I consider that to be a gimme for antelope. So it's like the antelope I've shot are like mid 60s. Tom's 2 years ago was 73. And like, we're only shooting stuff that like we have 100% confidence on. And we hard punched everything at that range still. But it's like, I'm not doing that for whitetails, you know, but you still get those reps in. And I noticed like, even though I shoot like so much, and I've been doing this for my entire existence, like I still can find another level as soon as my reps just go up that late summer time frame, where like the confidence just, it changes. Even though like right now I could go out and I could put 10 arrows at 60 like that, like there's still something that happens when I do a lot of reps that it just, the confidence still goes through the roof. But yeah, right now is usually that time frame where I start to get the jitters and be like, I need to up my reps substantially.
Oh yeah. So 100% now starting this, you know, I'll go pick my bow up and I'll start shooting again. And, you know, obviously dropping down, I'm going to have to resight everything in, readjust, you know, paper. I'll probably paper tune again, everything. But outside of that, I'm just looking for reps, man. And I'm not a big shooter, so I'm not going to spend like hours doing it. I'll probably just go, you know, off the back deck, shoot my target at 20 yards and just slowly get into it. And then once a week, closer to that August, September timeframe, I'll probably do sessions where I'll block off one hour and do once a week, something like that. But knowing that my longest shot this year is going to be inside 40 yards. I mean, I don't have a tree stand that I am going to be able to have a outside a 40 yard shot on. So I'm just,
dude, that's how you should do whitetails anyways, man.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Gotta be within 40. I mean, you gotta be, things can get so weird outside that range. And like, if you do it right, I think you should be able to set yourself up for a 20 yarder if you know what you're doing in the woods, you know, just cause it's like, they're going to use certain things and you can figure that out. But yeah, I've noticed that like, for me, it's not always like it's not a numbers thing. Especially with my resistance, like I do a full resistance. There's no triggers or nothing. It's just simply weight. Yeah. Like it's all, if I can just do like 5 shots a day and just get that feel, as long as my bow's sighted in, like as long as I'm just doing a few reps and just like keeping that muscle memory, that's all I need. Yep. Like I don't need to go out and shoot 50 arrows.
You're right. But, yeah. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, dude, this has been a great conversation today. I know we were heavily focused on trail cameras, but we got into a little bit of everything. Are now that the fourth is over, is the temperature starting to go up for the season? Is it getting closer? Or when for you does it really like, all right, dude, it's game time? When do you start prepping?
it's pretty dang close. I think the only thing that's holding me back is I have one family trip in the next couple weeks that I'm like, okay, once I get back from that, it's going to be like, lid's going to pop off a little bit where I'm just like, the planning's going to go to another level and I'm just going to like, it's just going to be in my thoughts more, you know?
Right.
Like a lot of the hunts, there's a few new hunts that like will actually take a lot of on-X time, a lot of mapping and thinking and strategizing, but a lot of them are just going to be, it's kind of a close to home year. Just kind of like you're doing, like we're really focusing in Nebraska, Kansas year because we didn't draw anything in Colorado. So it's like, okay. We can just like lock in at home and it's just going to be, that's when the hype really starts to build. Soon it's kind of creeping into August. It's like, especially in Nebraska, like if you can get bucks moving, doing stuff through mid-August, it's like, hold on for a couple more weeks and you can get some consistency and shoot one early season. So that'll be on the radar before you know it.
Oh yeah, man. Hell yeah, man. Well, good luck to you and your brother, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to this. If you, the listener, could do me a huge favor and go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, like, subscribe, leave a review. These are also on YouTube. So if you just want to watch our beautiful faces instead of listen to us as well, you can do that on the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. And good vibes your way, Nate. Good luck this season, my friend.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you.